please crucify Bill, and add something or a correction, please jump in. But we met with Judge Bell for a couple hours. She was very receptive to the conversation. In fact, she agreed with the position that she's not comfortable either with the lower level Raymond Fee Court. Her concerns are right now that the timing of trying to change that, even though Melissa is moving on to Justice Court, aren't right because of the caseloads currently handled by the criminal justice. So she was receptive, but she's making it part of a global plan with the number of judges she's requesting at the legislature. If she gets it, she didn't really key as to what the number was that she felt comfortable with, but if she gets an expansion of the criminal judges Clark County, she would move to put pleas back in front of the district court. Another one of her options is depending on, again, the number of judges she receives, if any, from the legislature, is to have an article to have an actual district court judge here in the plea. So it would be in the basement, it would be in a particular department or a judge. So she's not necessarily opposed to a plea court, just like in the basement, just like with a hearing master, but ultimately she doesn't believe it's a good idea for the district court itself. Whoever takes the plea says it's an individual. All the commentary that we've had previously, she was not opposed to. She's just not comfortable with the timing right now because of the caseloads and the expansion would do the criminal calendars if the police went straight from Justice Court to District Court.
This is Franny. So it could be some time before, and particularly if they give it to a district judge. I think the problem that is still present is the violation of the failure to follow the performance standards. I think I'm hearing more and more that very few of the track attorneys, whether you can confirm this or not, are actually being able to go do that court. And so they're seeing somebody for the first time, maybe only time, with the lawyer that's there at court. So I don't know the solution to that is other than to examine it and see if you can assure that people are not meeting publicly with the client for the very first time in the lockup.
Well, Bill, yes, this Bill come. They've met with their attorneys before. What they haven't done is have the plea agreement in front of them and gone over it with them. That's
but it's
what
a different
heard.
Lawyer is what yes. I'm hearing, is that yes. they're being handed the plea agreement. That lawyer doesn't know what's been discussed for a client in the previous meeting. That's where the disconnect is. And I think the jurisdiction really of this group is the performance standards not being followed. And so you've got a public meeting with a client, even if they've met with their track attorney before, the lawyer that's talking to them about what's in the plea agreement has no clue what might have been discussed.
Right, when they have a new question, they're not there. There's just nobody to send everyone down there, and there's no time. It's just wrong.
Yeah.
And my concern is, I don't know how many judges it's going to take that would mollify the district court and say we're going to take this back on our calendar, because they like not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I mean, I've already said once before, when this comes up in front of the legislature, I'm going to be a private citizen. And I'm really troubled by this. Troubled by the fact that judges will get a plea, but will get a sentencing EMP report, and will never see the client, and will wonder, how did this deal go down? I'm not taking this. Where if a judge takes a plea, they know why it was given. And judges are blowing up pleas, and it's wrong on every level. Just saying, hey, we'll look at it after we get our judges, I mean, is not acceptable.
But I think the important thing, though, Bill, is when Drew and I met with Judge Bell, I mean, those are the same concerns that she had. So I think at the first, very highest levels of the district court, I think your concerns are being shared. And so, you know, there's a number of issues in play. And we all know this. Number one is they're hurting for criminal judges. Judge Togliatti has announced her retirement. Will that be replaced with somebody with criminal experience or not? We don't know that. But the chief judge at you and I have dealt with chief judges for the last 15 years, right? They are at the mercy of the district court of the other judges. And so while they have some power, the power is limited by what all the other judges will do insofar as supporting what decisions they make. So Judge Bell, I can tell you after having a conversation with her, not only that conversation, but previous conversations, he shares all the concerns that many people in this room have. And she is committed to do something about it. As Drew said, it's a timing issue. And then I'm not so sure she said this a whole lot, but just what I know is there's a whole lot of personalities there. And you're going to have, I think there's going to be a significant amount of pushback by the other district court to do something about it.
Mr. Mark, I could not agree with you more. It's one, the Supreme Court, quite some time ago, installed the concept of a strong chief judge. And what I've watched over these last 15 years is watch that become, let's just say, less. And I share the same concern with you. Because when I go to a judge's meeting and I see only one or two or three or four judges who ever to handle a criminal case in their life, doing criminal law, it's scary. It's the new word I was going to use. And I'm afraid that next year, when there's even fewer who are going to do criminal law, then they don't know that we ever did things the right way in front of the judge that's actually hearing the plea and has verbal representation. So I'm really worried, and I want some assurance, and I think the legislature should want some assurance that if they put more judges on, that the judges are going to do the job they're supposed to do and not give it to the hearing minister.
Well, the legislative fix is to restrict the ability to delegate under the statute.
I think it is.
What happens the first Monday in January when she becomes a JP? Are you going to fill that? Or can we say that we would request that you not fill that position? Let's see what they do.
Turn it into something else.
Just say no position. And the judges are going to have to do their job. Otherwise, I can see, I'm not speaking for my colleagues, I'm not even speaking for myself, I can see a plea going down, and then for whatever reason the person decides to file a pretrial writ, we maybe stay the whole process. It happened before when I was a public defender, when there were issues about who picks the grand jury. We were able to stay every drug case in this community. We stay every drug case, and I'm talking about for a couple of years. And it can happen. I'm just saying, I don't know where my colleagues stand. I don't know where I stand on this, but we always wonder why we don't see a little more of this from the public defender's office.
Justice Cherry, could this be, in my view, the only role of the IDC in this process, we're not here to advise the courts how to do their work, but we are here to ensure that the performance standards are, that they're not being made impossible to comply with by some process. Is it possible that this commission and write a letter to the chief judge, say, here's our concern, is the violations of the performance standards and that any decision that is made, which might give her some support and some assistance.
I can tell that we support her, but I can hear what Chris said and what Bill said, what Drew said. It doesn't sound like she disagrees.
Yeah,
now the issue. Now the question is, how do you resolve this? Depth is the one who resolves it. Not the position.
That's just my opinion.
No, I agree. Well,
that's not going to help.
When I've spoken with her.
It's hard to hear you. Could you speak up? You're cutting out.
Part of her problem is she has judges who have done criminal work who don't want to take a criminal assignment. She's got several judges who have never walked into a criminal courtroom and don't want to take the assignment. She's got a few she's tried, and they perhaps failed at that assignment. So the solution that she has is, let's wait 2 years, and then maybe we'll get more judges out of the legislature. There's no guarantee the judges she gets in that next election won't all be civil anyhow, and it won't solve the problem. And so I kind of agree with Franny. We ought to try to do something sooner rather than wait 2 years to maybe solve it.
How about a bill that creates a civil department and a criminal department?
I would rather go Franny's other way, which says you just can't delegate that responsibility down. So if you have a criminal docket, you have to do all aspects of the criminal case.
when we had specialization, when Nancy said that, and I were first elected in 1718, 1819, we all got civil, and the way we got civil, all civil, is there was specialization. Those who had civil calendars were having like nervous breakdowns because they did a half and half. Half the judges were civil and half the judges were criminal. The civil judges were overwhelmed. So we became civil judges and everybody else walked away and became criminal judges, Mark Gibbons and some others who had never done criminal cases. Then when Mahan came in, he saw what a waste it was that some of us had criminal experience, we're doing all civil, we went to the half and half. That's what we did in the early 2000s. But when we first came in, everybody who had a chance to move from civil to criminal moved to criminal. Now it's the complete opposite.
Yep.
Mainly because the calendars are so large and the responsibility of sending so many people to prison for such a long time.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time that a new criminal draft was had.
There was discussion at some point about taking other responsibilities away from the district court judges, like maybe a discovery commissioner, something that wouldn't have such a huge impact on the defendant directly as taking the plea. Is that still in the works?
I think that's a possibility, but I don't. I think Judge Bell mentioned using the masters for more specialty courts.
Yeah, she brought that up. She envisioned a system where the specialty courts, like currently drug courts, being heard by a district court judge and some of the variety of others, but she was pretty candid about some of the failures that happened with certain individuals handling certain specialty courts. Her thought was to hire hearing masters who had a passion and an experience and a background in that particular modality, so that if you got somebody for drug court or DUI court or veterans court,
special
so the position that Melissa currently has, in her, and correct me if I'm wrong, whether it was discovery or other more broad topics, that she was open to keeping that position and putting it somewhere else. I think her pushback, the pushback that she would get from many of the judges, is not that they wouldn't be willing to take the pleas, but that right now, because of their caseloads, that the added 3 or 4 or 5 pleas per judge per day would expand it such that it would limit the trial time and any other, you know, concerns that they had. So she just didn't feel the timing was right to do it immediately, but that was what she wanted to do. Now, whether that meant 2 years, you know, let's suppose she gets the judges and 21 they come on board, you know, I had a feeling that she was committed enough to do something with it, that there may be something happens before 2 years, with even the knowledge that the judges are coming out.
Well, these judges can see how they go to federal court when they take a plea, you know, when they do a sentencing. And they should thank their stars if they don't have to do what the federal judge can do, especially when they guidelines as mandatory. So, and it's just, and if the sentencing commission goes through, where we're going to demand findings, have sentences, and there'll be an opportunity actually to appeal sentences where there isn't now, as long as it's in the statutory scheme of things. It's going to be a completely different ballgame. Who knows what's going to happen with the legislature? Gibbons will be Chief Justice. He's been meeting with the judges. They're adamant about a possible raise of about 30,000, 15 new judges, and 15 new judges, 17 altogether, one in Reno and one in Elko. And so it's going to be a bluster if there ever was one. But I think I feel like we have a responsibility built to your office. Are you having any of the same problems?
It's a rare day that a case from my office has entered down.
What about the appointed counsel when they go down the district?
I think the appointed counselor down there, they actually have the report representation because they don't have
different bills. Doesn't anybody raise an issue? I mean, when I was a lawyer, I didn't let people step all over me. What do they do? They don't have a chance to talk to their clients on a plea agreement, for God's sakes?
Well, they do. I mean, if they waive up from justice court, I mean, hopefully there's a discussion that says we're about to go in 2 days, you have a plea agreement, and it may not be perfect what they're talking to, but the people I've talked to say they go back behind the window, talk to their clients are comfortable with going through the plea, they go for the plea.
They haven't met that lawyer before.
Because the timing is such, you can't get everybody down there at the same time.
But I haven't heard, even with your office, if there's an issue with the plea,
and if it means that's why it's going to get out of custody when the plea.
Yeah, look,
I told people, just take them all to district court, and the judge has got mad. I don't mind doing it. I don't mind just ordering everyone, don't take pleas down there. Take them tomorrow, we want the next day. It's gonna go back in two more days in jail, and that's the problem that so many of these, a number of them, are dependent on the release after entry of plea. This is wrong too, I mean, maybe we should take all of that, put it in front of the Supreme Court right now. Well, I don't think Justice Sherry is wrong enough. But just saying, well, we wait 2 years to do this is just not appropriate.
Well, what I'd like to request, Justice Cherry, is that you communicate with Judge Bell that there's a great deal of concern on the commission with regard to what's happening with the attorney-client, just the ADKT 411 stuff, just the performance standard stuff, and take that into consideration in determining what happens when Melissa Del Garce goes on to the JP dash.
I've had numerous meetings with Melissa since she became chief judge over some issues in family court. We've been trying this out. Right now, her job is overwhelming. Not even herding cats anymore. It's like herding leopards, which is lions.
Yeah, and this is Todd Young. I don't think that leaning on Judge Bell is move us any further. We've already heard that she's aware of the situation. She's very sympathetic, but although she's the chief, she's not their boss. And when you talk about herding cats, it's herding feral cats, and it's not something that the chief can just impose on them. I agree that I think 2 years is too long to wait for this, but I don't think that leaning on Judge Bell is the way to do it. It may be that a meeting with the entire 8th judiciary is a better way to go, and not trying to undercut Judge Bell's authority, but simply requiring them all to appear and to discuss what is in fact a constitutional issue, not one of their inconvenience.
I think the PD's office has got more control here than they're using. I think on every case that the client's not getting out of custody, pass it to the next calendar, and make the judges start taking pleas again. And if that means they have to come to work at 9 instead of 9:30 and work till lunch and do their trials in the afternoon, well, welcome aboard. It's a full-time job, and taking a half an hour more to do pleas is a valid use of that time.
But you have some departments that are concluding without doing pleas, do 2:30 in the afternoon. I don't...
Still?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, I understand the approach. I understand the frustration. And we're frustrated, too.
I just don't think...
And how long calendars are taking.
I don't think you can have a valid conversation with a client about a plea agreement in a room full of other people that, for the first time. Plea agreements are critically important, and there needs to be... Contact is a face-to-face contact, going over the terms of the plea agreement, not talking about misdemeanors. The felony conviction is important, and I don't think you can do it in that environment.
Here's the other thing that, I hate to burst everybody's bubble here. This week, I celebrate 24 years in the DA's office. Attorneys getting the guilty plea agreement, and I'm not just saying public defenders, Bill, so I don't want you to think that I'm pointing or signaling your office, all attorneys, private, institutional attorneys, all of them. In the days when I was doing district court, they would say, hey, you got the guilty plea agreement, because it was still sitting in our file. Nobody had ever gotten it. Nobody had ever picked it up. And they'd go have a conversation with their client in the jury box for the first time. So, what we're talking about is great, but it's not as though arraignment court has changed this.
In ADKT 411, it's not supposed to be some thing up in the sky that we hope to do. They're supposed to be doing
it. My only point is, arraignment court did not change what was really happening
in
the 8th Judicial District Court.
Because
that's all I'm saying.
Chris, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just simply saying that in the time that ADKT has existed, so has arraignment court. And so we don't know
what it's going to be like between a regular court and the requirements of ADK 2411. And the fact of the matter is that I realize the calendars are going long, but there's just no way to do this. And it's important to note that I don't know what the next person's going to do. But from what Jonelle says, that we should just put it over and put it to that court. I'm telling you, if we put it over, all that happens is it goes over to the next day for Judge Jella Garza. I want it to go to the district court judge. That's what it has to happen. And when we say no, we're not going up there, she's been ordered to put it back on her calendar. And that's not right.
But and let me tell you, from the district's attorney standpoint, we want a good, valid plea. Because when somebody wants to withdraw their plea, we're defending the plea. So the better the plea is, better for us. So, I mean, I don't disagree with, in theory, what everyone's talking about. I'm just telling you, as a real matter, what has happened in the past and what, if I had to bet, what will happen in the future.
Chris, I also think that your office can get pleas to attorneys faster.
In a 24-hour?
Yeah,
maybe I need to have an offline conversation about staffing in our office.
No, all I'm saying, Chris, all those things go together.
Right.
You can't blame it on us when you guys can't get it to us.
I'm not blaming.
We're saying they get it for the first time out of your file. They're not getting it. Now, it's part of that equation is how long it takes your office to get together a plea. It should be a macro with a few buttons. It should not be this long, difficult process.
There's much more involved in creating a plea document than you think. There's internal controls.
And that's why I haven't attacked it. I agree.
Yeah,
don't tell me that we're not going to get them and we're not going away.
Listen, it's next to impossible with a 48-hour turnaround. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. But I'm saying when there was the two week time frame, this was how things were done.
But you know, it seems to me that Judge Young kind of hit the nail on the head here. It's a crying shame, and I'm embarrassed, frankly, that our rural and Washoe County counterparts have to hear us have this conversation, because it really is embarrassing. But it started with the 8 judicial district judges deciding that they were going to get their way by delegating a responsibility that they ran for office to undertake. And I think that we're going to have to do it one way or the other, and leaning on Linda is not going to get it done. And if it means getting the entire 8th Judicial District Court in the same room so we can make a presentation to let them know that they've got to walk this thing back to where it was before they stopped doing their job, I don't see any other way we solve this. Because look at what's going on here. We've got the district attorney and the public defenders arguing about whether or not, you know, if we go back to where we should have had it, you know, and that's doing these plea agreements and getting these plea deals in advance in the courtroom in front of the district judge that's going to sentence the defendant. I think that, you know, that's going to work itself out. We've got to go back to where we were, 10 years ago, when this nightmare started?
15 years ago.
And do what every other judge in the state does. Take the damn guilty plea. It's embarrassing. And you can put that in the minutes.
John, I agree with you. And just because you agreed with me. This is what judges are supposed to be doing. And I realize there's a lot of people in the room who are judges and a lot of people who aren't judges. But the fact is, you wanted this job, and it's a great job. And the truth is, it's just part of the function of the job, it seems to me. But I don't think that, again, leaning on Judge Bell is going to move any of those other judges, because they'll look right at her and they'll say, "You're not my boss." And she can make some adjustments in how the calendars and those kind of things work. But I think that it's going to take a meeting with a Supreme Court justice or some Supreme Court justices and Judge Bell, and a requirement that every one of those judges attend. calendars aside, vacation days aside, you need to come, and those judges will also tell you, look, Supreme Court Justice, you're not my boss either. And they're not. But you can certainly point out, as I think Franny has said over and over, that there are performance standards here, and there are constitutional standards that have to be adhered to. And, you know, if you wanted this job, you should be taking pleas and sitting on the bench. And I don't know. I'm not trying to speak for all of the rural judges, but I know that we all have very, very busy docket. And it is not unusual for me on law motion days and days when I'm hearing criminal cases that we don't have a lunch and that we go on through it and that we keep working. You know, we break for the clerk and the court reporter, but we go right back in. And I realize my docket may not be the same as a Clark County judge, but there's a way to solve it, and the way it isn't to pass it off to a master. I think there are other tasks that can be passed to masters that are not constitutional tasks.
Those of you who attended the IDC and Nevada will realize that but for the rural judges who have supported me 100% because of John and Franny, what you've done with the rural judges, they've come forward to the IDC, they've come forward to the Nevada Right to Counsel Group Commission. Where are my 8 judicial district criminal judges? I mean, they've never really overwhelmed us, Jeff. You've been here, Drew, you've been here. God forbid they should get on the phone during a 1:30 meeting over the 10 years that we've been doing this. So thank you, rural judges. Thank you, John, for what you've done for the rural community, rural judges that have been supporting ADKT and do everything. They do criminal, they do civil, they do family. And they do everything. And all I can say is that Phil and I will go talk with Linda Bell again and see at least a prediction, and I'll remind her about it. I was on the district court bench when we came up with the strong chief judge. And the idea was that nobody would go against the chief judge, but you could try to remove that chief judge. That was the only thing. We spent a lot of time on there. And they had a lot of authority. We've given both Scott and Linda, so Linda Bell, a lot of leeway on being the strong chief judge. Scott has lived up to it. It's been very good in Washoe, and we've just had problems down here with the various chief judges. So Phil, you and I, I'll set something up where we can go meet with Linda and see what we can accomplish.
Let's move on. The next thing is actually, we were going to talk about Henderson Municipal Court, but now is unavailable at an emergency. So we'll pass that to December 11th.
Yeah, and on December 11th, if people could give some thought to, because it has to do with the future of this commission. What I was going to request with regard to this agenda item is that we actually make a decision as to whether or not we are going to review plans, when we're going to review them, are we going to re-review the plans, but I think we should have a plan for the function of this commission in reviewing local plans.
And we'll discuss that on the 11th.
We can do it on the 11th.
Yeah, we'll do that. Jamie, if you make a note of that, make sure this is on.
And then Henderson has not submitted, I talked to emailed Jamie today, Henderson hasn't submitted an amended plan yet anyway.
So. The city will work on it. Let's go on to caseload standards. David Carroll, are you still on the phone with us?
I'm here.
Did you want to make some comments on caseload standards before I turn it over to Hans?
Sure. So I'm sorry, the last meeting I had to jump off a little early, so I missed the discussion of the caseload standards. But when I found out, I wrote Justice Cherry an email, which is available to you in your packet, where basically I think there's been so much work done on the National Rights, the Nevada Rights Council Commission, where people are really coming together on consensus towards getting something permanent passed, a permanent structure to oversee indigent defense, that a discussion right now on caseload standards would be too divisive. Even if we could get a caseload standard passed through the court doesn't have the infrastructure to monitor it, to do anything about it. And I really think the focus right now should be on getting a permanent commission with the ability to promulgate standards in place so that all the various competing sides can have their voices heard in a forum that is going to produce permanence on some of these issues. So it's not that I don't believe in caseload standards or anything like that. I just think we're not at the right time to be trying to move forward on that issue, where I'd much rather see people focused on getting a permanent infrastructure in place to oversee all of indigent defense and promulgate standards on a number of different issues. So that's a summation of what I think.
Justice Chair, go ahead.
And I, when I saw David's email afterwards, I thought I'd hit the nail on the head. I agree, David. And I think maybe I might be responsible for getting this ball rolling down the hill. At the last meeting, I wasn't really interested so much in going down the caseload standards road because of everything you said, David, and what you put in your email. What I was more concerned about, particularly, and I'd really be interested to hear what the rural judges have to say about this, because I know we have Judge Case and Judge Young and Judge Barron and Judge Lightfield on the line. I was just interested in figuring out a way, and I think the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission is the right entity to do this, just to capture caseload numbers so the rural counties know how many cases the lawyers in their counties are responsible for on an annual basis or at any one given time. We don't really have a good protocol in place that's uniform across the state to capture caseload numbers. And that's what I meant. I was not, believe me, and to the extent that I might have been confusing on this, I was not trying to go down a caseload standard road for every reason that David just said, and because I don't think it's the right time. But caseloads, vis-a-vis how many lawyers are working those cases, I think would be very helpful to inform the rural judges and the people on the ground in the rural counties that have to set up the system they set up, depending on if this legislation passes. So that's what I was talking about, Chief.
Go down that road, and if we're going to go down that road, the challenge with that is especially we've had a number of different times in this committee, is who's responsible for that information? Is it the responsibility of the contract attorneys, the rural counties? Is it the responsibility of the courts to capture that information? Or the public defenders in counties that have them? And the challenge is if it's the courts, number one, it's a change to the case management system, which costs significant amounts of money. And then if it is the courts, in addition to that, not only have to change the case management system, but we have to work with each jurisdiction. We have district justice, municipal courts. And yes, the justice courts and municipal courts handle misdemeanors, but at least for the justice courts, they're going to have that information for the pretrial or preliminary matters. And so you're going to have those systems upgraded, and that's a significant cost and a time and staff resource as well for the courts. And so those are things that I think that we've worked out in the past and that have kind of gotten in the way of grabbing caseload information. We've done the best that we can with this commission. Most of the district courts operate on the ABS system. And we spent about $10,000 from the AOC grant money that was available to pay for those systems to be upgraded to provide it. And that was most of the rural district courts. The challenge is now is that ABS system is now dying, for lack of a better term. They're going to new systems throughout the state. We have over 20 different case management systems. Most of those are not going to be that kind of a cost if it is.
This is Phil Cunningham. I think there's such a simple fix to this, and again, it's probably going to take a statewide commission. But statutorily, I have to keep those numbers,
as does every vote.
Karen Kreisberg has to keep
them. Yeah, we have to. Statutorily, we have to, and we do, and we make them available for county management, and we make them available for the legislature. All we have to do is put in every contract that every lawyer signs. You just have to keep track of how many cases are you getting.
All right, well, the problem with that, this is Judge Leonelch. The problem with that is that everybody's tracking their cases differently in relation to their clients. Yes. All right, so unless we come, and I've seen some uniform definitions, which is all fine. As long as everybody's on the same page, that's fine. I don't know, because I know exactly how many felony cases I have, and I know exactly how many public defender felony cases that I have and gross misdemeanors in my court. So, the fact of the matter is that if we would just go with the USJRs, instead of messing around with 16 other million different definitions on how to track things, so that the court can track them based on what we're already tracking, it would make our life so much easier.
I agree with that 100%, Judge Schlegelmilch. I could tell you exactly how many cases my public defenders have and how many cases I have. But there are different ways of tracking these things, as I think that we've all seen. So you either have to create a uniform way of tracking them, or you can go with the USJR, which I think is the easiest way. And I understand what you're talking about as far as case management systems go, because we're installing one now, and it's very, very expensive and time-consuming. But one of the other factors about this whole caseload standard thing is at least for my county, and I would imagine for some of the other judges who are sitting out there, when I go and I tell my county commissioners that I need another public defender, or I need to increase the salaries or the contract levels for the public defenders that I have, there's nobody else going to go make that argument to the county commissioners, at least in this county. And the caseload standards help with getting enough defense attorneys to do the task. Now, I think we've been pretty successful at doing that in Douglas County, but I have five counties. So getting any more nickels out of them, it is not just based on me going and saying that we need to do this. The numbers help. Not just the numbers. These commissioners have no concept of what it means to handle 100 felony cases or 400 felony cases. To them, they don't get it. But if I had some caseload standards that either came from this commission, even if they were a loose number that I could go and throw at them and say, look, folks, it's not going to continue like this unless you do what I'm telling you. Those numbers are very valuable in helping us fund the public defender system. And while we all hope that the state would fund the public defender system, and I hear that, I'm not particularly optimistic that it's going to happen. And so the caseload standards are very valuable for more than just keeping track of how many cases people are doing. They're valuable for making sure that there are enough attorneys to do those cases.
Well, and I agree with Judge Young to a certain extent, but first I think we need to establish, how to really track these things. Because I looked at David Carroll's report, and so I did some checking into my case management system, and our public defenders here in Lyon County are showing at least three times the amount of cases than they're getting filed in my court in the 3rd Judicial District. So they're saying they have 1,000 cases and I get 300. So tell me how that happens based on what they're reporting and what the USJRs say I have to report to the AFC. So, there are issues there in relation, and you can say, well, it starts out as a felony in the justice court. Well, a lot of cases start out as drug felonies that are pled in 10 seconds to a drug misdemeanor or a marijuana ticket. So are those the kind of cases that we're talking about as it relates to this? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the problem is the standards are different for every person that actually reports. So, in Winnemucca, you get reporting one way. In 9th District, you get reporting in one way. In 3rd District, I get reporting in three separate ways because nobody can do it the same way, even though I've talked to them all about it. So and I understand what you're talking about in relation to coming up with case standards, but I'm in agreement with Mr. Carroll that we take the actual caseload standards and kick that down the road to the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission once it gets adopted on a permanent basis by the legislature, and fight the fight in the legislature to allow that to happen, as long as all the procedural requirements under the Administrative Procedure Act are in place, that you are properly noticing everybody before they're making regulations that are overboard, so to speak, and that everybody can comment on. So I guess that's my comment on that. So case standards, probably a good thing, but I think they need to be based on real cases and not a shadow of somebody's perception of how they're handling cases. So, my opinion.
I have a question, and Hans maybe will answer. I don't know what a USJR is. I assume that's the way that courts count cases.
It's the acronym for the term Uniform System of Judicial Records, and it is a defined way in which courts have to report.
And there is a difference between the USJR and the case definition dictionary that we spent all that time doing.
The way that it was built is similar, but the term,
the definitions are different because we forget sometimes that we spent hours and hours. Jeff Wells and I actually ended up agreeing on things, and came up with that case dictionary. The staff spent a whole bunch of time on that. So we do have a uniform definition for defense counsel to count cases. And if there was a way to enforce through contract or otherwise that they utilize those case definitions in constructing, like a biennial report of caseload or something.
Yeah, but what do you do? I mean, what do you do about the problem that Judge Schlegelmann just identified? And that is, if the court, I was surprised to hear this, but not shocked, I guess. If the court is saying that the court has 300 cases, but the contract lawyer is saying that he had 900 cases that year, the inference that I'm drawing is not favorable to the contract lawyer.
We suspect that it's charges, that they're not utilizing the dictionary. Well,
but then if you think about what Judge Young was saying in terms of his having to go to his commissioners to get quality representation in his county, and again, maybe what we're talking about is something that the Right to Counsel Commission will solve for us, but this conversation needs to occur, I think, because again, I think that the number of cases will start the ball rolling with regard to how many cases a lawyer should handle without us having to say, a hard and fast number. Judge Young knows in his county, Judge Kaysen knows in his county, Judge Perman and Judges Schlegelmilch know in their counties. They've been there a long time. I trust their judgment. I just think that if we have a uniform definition of a case, and maybe it should be what the court's definition is, then we can go from there.
But we do have a uniform. We have a uniform definition.
Well, it's not uniform because we also have to report, as Judge Schlegelmilch said, under another system. And so there's a separate way of counting. And the dictionary, as you're talking about, Freddie, is... it's useful, but it's not the only way of counting these cases. And that's one reason that we get different numbers.
Yeah, I agree it's not the only way, but I'm just wondering if we've already developed the dictionary and, just following through with what I think Phil said, is that if through the county contracts you said, here is the definition of a case, and you are to provide as pursuant to your contract two times a year, one time a year, whatever, a case count based upon this definition, because there was a reason why we came up with a separate way of counting it, because the data for judges is different than the data that you need for a defense attorney.
This is Hans, and I've worked, my primary responsibility is USJRs. I can tell you the primary difference between the USJR measurement for a case and what we're asking to be reported as a case for indigent defense purposes is basically when the appointment takes place. The problem is the USGRs are counting a case when the case is filed. And in different jurisdictions, some jurisdictions based upon prosecutorial practices, a case that has a single incident that has a felony or gross misdemeanor or felony and a misdemeanor case is going to be two cases because that is going to be split into the justice right. court, one's going to go up to the district court. In another jurisdiction, that's going to be a single case. So we don't define that level in USJRs. We don't base it on a single incident. We say a single filing. complaint word information.
But we do in the dictionary.
I don't know that we do in the dictionary. The difference largely is when is the appointment taking place? It's the appointment of counsel, which is a different measurement from USGR, because that absolutely starts after the complaint. So they're correct in that there is a different measure, USGR, or when a case is counted versus when a indigent defense case is counted. The other thing that I would point out is because of the discrepancies that were just discussed in different case types, it could be charges, it could be cases based upon prosecutorial discretion. It could be that this is a contract attorney who has private cases as well, and they're maybe including all those. The thing is there's no way to go out and ensure the accuracy of this reporting as well. There's no auditing that could, because there's no authority.
Well, this gives us a good reason to postpone this until we get my defense committee.
No, Justice, I think should be kicked over is the standards part of it, and that's where we kind of got off track last time. But I think to be able to just at least report out how many cases, that's all. And I don't think they won't even be able to get started on standards unless there's a uniform definition in place and we've got some numbers. They won't even be able to get started on standards.
Well, we've got 15 rural judges. Hans, what do you think you and Jamie's the rural coordinator, two of you could get together and go to each judge and find out, take them to school on how we need the numbers other than the USJ, whoever it is.
I could discuss that with them. I'd be happy to. One of the last things I'd point out on this. The thing with the USJR is it started with NRS. We have specific requirements under district, justice, and municipal court statutes that require statistical reporting of court case law statistics. We don't have that in this instance. And so we were allowed to use this USJR dictionary to define how those are reported to the ASC. I kind of feel like we're putting the cart before the horse. That instance.
Or could you use Franny's dictionary and Jeff's, the dictionary they came up with? You go to the various rural judges, there's 15 of them, and just go take them to school on how we're going to count the cases, not the USJC.
You get it built into the contract.
Let's try that. You've got it until the
because it's to, it's to the
just I'll absolutely reach out to Jamie.
Jamie, you'll get together with us and see what we can do. And the judges that are on the phone, if you'll cooperate fully with Hans and Jamie, and we'll see if we can come up with some numbers.
Because as Judge Young points out, it's to the advantage of the rural counties to have a trustworthy number that they can work with.
That's how they're going to start their
interest. Otherwise, we're going to send them a ring master.
Yeah.
Protocol.
If you do this,
I think we've at least got a little bit of a handle on it. Mainly, we're going to put forward to that right to counsel commission that's going to be here. All right, next is Amy Rose. What's the latest on ACLU?
Sure. So we just filed an amended complaint. We added a couple of new plaintiffs, and we added an additional information about David Carroll's report and the Right to Counsel Commission and just some new facts that happened since we filed almost exactly a year ago. So now we've amended the complaint, kind of restarting some of the processes a little bit in terms of class certification with the new plaintiffs and doing a little bit of discovery. So just slowly plugging along still, nothing really big to report other than that.
Thank you. Next, we have the status update on indigent defense in Clark County. Drew or Phil or Janelle, would you like to tell us how we're doing in Clark County?
This is Janelle. My office conducted an assessment under ADKT 411, had all the attorneys in the office there and the investigators. We went line by line through everything, talked about where we're meeting the standards, where we need a little more work, identified two areas that we're not so sure about, the waiving an appeal and post-conviction as part of the plea agreement. It is troublesome, but that's in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, so we can just wait for them to decide. But I was happy with where we came out. We're having contact visits, we're doing the investigation, and I feel like I was proud of the work the office is doing. I thought it was a really useful exercise to go through the standards.
with the whole, with everyone in the office. I'm really glad to see the performance standards being used. Great. It's great.
Bill, speaking of performance standards, this is for the benefit of Justice Cherry. Next Monday, there will be a discussion in front of the Nevada Supreme Court on ADKT 0499. It is about training and who pays, and I'm terrified about it. I'm really, really concerned. I think the most important thing that has happened in our office over the last 14 years has been the training, and we've had this discussion so many times on the Nevada Right to Counsel. How can we help in Clark County with training the rest of the state? And I'm more than willing to obligate the next public defenders to set up training throughout the state and make it available telephonically or over the computers to help everyone. But if we have to pay for everyone because we do not designate between for-profit CLE and non-profit CLE, that is really, really going to hurt our office and our ability to train ourselves, Drew's people. I know this is an issue for the DA's office and for the federal defender and Justice Cherry. I won't be there at the desk, remember. I implore you to keep nonprofits where we are.
I just looked at that docket. There's got to be 15 different entities that have objected to the nation, including the district attorney's office, including the FPD office, including Clark County Public Defender. I mean, it's just across the board. Objection to this.
Yeah, okay. And I'm just so concerned. I just want to make sure that the steps that we've made in the last 14 years with ADKT 411 and with training, this has the possibility to unwind all of that. And I just, this is the best way. Thank you.
Ditto. We agree.
We had a good meeting with Nell from the DA's office, with folks from Phil's office, from the federal PD. We all sat down. We're all on the same page on this. My office just bought a nice video camera for mitigation interview. Our plan is to film our CLEs, and we're working with NACJ to make those available by subscription free to people in the rural communities who don't have access to CLE, or to our trial attorneys who are in trial when they're going on or what have you. But if we have to pay extra fees, it really discourages us from having extra programs. And there's an extra fee for making them available outside of the live presentation. It seems like a giant step back.
For it's ridiculous. Did judges still have to take CLE?
Sure.
Yeah, well, it's going to apply to you guys too.
Well, that means an oversight.
Oh, I'm against this.
And not me either, because I'm oversighting.
But I still submit my CLB every year just to. I wanted to be retroactive, but I understand we're getting that portion.
Drew, what do you have to say about the appointed counsel?
Nothing significant changes, Jim. Father, as long as there's no specific incident that's taking place. Last month since we last
met. Oh, you did a great job. Great job. Really appreciate your inception and coming. And now to Washington. Also, our public defenders there doing a great job. Any comments by Mark or Bob Bell or John?
Justice Cherry, this is Mark. I want to build on just briefly what Phil and the others in the South were talking about. As to CLE, we've got the same issue. There is absolutely no criminal defense CLE offered in Washoe County other than what the public defender or our office, the APD, provides. So it's just going to, and there's no budget to pay for what the ADKT requests the changes. So other than that, we're doing well. We're both adding a family court attorney in the next few months and to take a little pressure off. But we also have some changes coming up in specialty courts up here. There's going to be some changes among the judges that are handling those things, and those numbers are large. So we're moving forward.
You've done the good work, all of you. You did a great job. Watch out.
Very proud of you.
Who's that handsome guy behind you? That's what I want to know. There he is. Chris Hicks.
Always participates, by the way. The district attorney from our show and the Lally, you guys are always with me. So thank you for your support. I've done here. I'll miss you both. We next have the. Is Karen? I couldn't tell if Karen was in Corruption.
She's here.
Karen,
I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
There you are. That's why I usually sit with you. Over there. What's new with the state public defender? Are you handling all the appeals throughout the state? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right. No, not. But I did alert our budget people that that's a possibility, so they won't be caught off guard. But we're doing well. I think I'm going to try and send all of our trial attorneys to a National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. I think it's a 3-day conference in Phoenix in February, and then the National Drug Court Conference in Washington D.C. this year. We're trying to get the judges to help us send a couple people, because there's some significant trend changing going on in the specialty court world. So we like to try and keep up on that. We send a couple, and they can come back and spread the word throughout the other courts. So we're just looking to improve ourselves through training and then put it into practice.
Keep up the good work. I know we don't have anybody here with the federal public defender.
I don't believe so.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, okay, thank you. Next is Chris. How are we doing now with the murder day? Murder per day or two murders per day?
Well, yeah. So there's a lot of cases, obviously. At the most recent update, since the program started, 159 homicides have been resolved either through leads. As of this year, 11 cases have been dismissed, 26 have been tried, 24 have been tried by the designated homicide departments. So two were tried, two were sent out to non-homicide departments in overflow, and 60 are currently pending rendition of sentence. So we've had 60 resolved through pleas. Currently, and this is just in the district court, so this doesn't represent anything in the justice court, there are 226 cases pending trial today, as of last month. 51 of those are capital cases. In June of this year, just to give everybody a sense of where things were, 18 cases had been tried, 66 cases had numbers aren't making sense, so I'm not sure where I'm pulling all this stuff from, but the report that I had was 66 cases had entered guilty pleas and 7 were dismissed. Of those cases, 60 were resolved by either private counsel or offices of appointed counsel. 19 were resolved by the Special Public Defender's Office, 12 were resolved by the public.
Questions or comments to Chris? Any negative so far?
It's, have we not moved to this sort of pilot specialized docket to handle murder cases, we would be in an absolute world of hurt in terms of moving murder cases through the system.
Your 51 capital, Chris, that's not defendants, that's cases from your. Is that a case?
As of cases, there are 51 capital cases.
How many defendants?
I don't have it broken down that way.
Would it be some lesser number of defendants?
No, that would be more.
Co-defendants. Potentially more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that, it's just there are co-defendants.
That didn't match my numbers that I had, but basically it didn't match that.
How much more do you have to do?
Well, the private bar would be close to 40, right?
I've heard 64 is the last number I heard. 64 people.
Pending. 64 defendants, yes. Pending death.
And that's not a while. I don't know. That's not.
We resolved something. We've been resolving a number of capital cases.
Okay.
think we're at 14 or 15.
Any further comments to anybody about this? Next meeting is, Jamie scheduled next meeting for December 11th.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we'll be here or be in Carson. I'm not sure, running back and forth trying to clean out two offices and then home. But we'll see what happens. But thank you everybody for participating. And
Dr. Cherry?
Yes.
This is Dana Levesque, Las Vegas Municipal. I just wanted to give an update on our project that we briefed last meeting about.
Sure. Thanks, Dan.
The jail is in the process of constructing some privacy areas. We've identified and procured the phones for the court. The jail was not pleased that the phones for their facility were not secure enough with the steel cable cords and able to mount securely enough for the falls to the walls. So they're looking for a better, more jail-appropriate phone that still serves the same purpose. So we're still on track for hopefully by the end of November. But we're doing everything we can in tracking the project.
Thank you. Thanks for ending the meeting on a happy note or some
progress.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Anything else to come before the IDC? Thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Thanks.